It's 8:21. I will no longer shall be you the koidem shachara be'abayist. Abayist be meish shosh loyim ha'ilam. Before the Beis Hamikdash was destroyed during the time of these three shepherds, and refers to the children of Yoshio. Yoshio had three sons. The Yoshio, the three shepherds, and there were four kings after Yoshio, but we're referring to the main, so we're referring to those that remained in Eretz Yisrael, not Yehoyachim. When Hashem says, when I saw the future, and I saw that you would not have a king that would be able to return you to Tshuva, so let me put everyone on mute. I have to do this a little bit differently today because I don't have my regular system here. So one moment. Forgot how to do this. Okay, let's go further. When I saw Kimase, like it says in Chumash, Hashem says, I'm going to hide myself. There is going to be Hester upon him. Hashem says he will conceal himself in Klal Yisrael. And when that happens, then it is a natural state of chaos. That's a very interesting idea, that in this world, by the default, is chaos. And Hashem, you need Hashem to restore order. If not for this idea, I think most people would say it's just the opposite. Most people would probably say that the natural state of the world of Teva is calm and peace. Right? Hashem created a world. It's a very difficult hashkafic concept. I think the average person would assume that when he created this world, the world is a peaceful place. Teva, the body, anything in science in its natural state appears to be calm, peaceful. It is man that interferes. Man, he emits carbon. He does things to this world that destroys the world. But if we would just leave the world in its natural state, everything would operate perfectly. We think that appears to be correct in science and in health and in the environment. Yet, when it comes to spirituality, it appears to be just the opposite. It appears to be that when man is left alone, natural, there is chaos. There is an intensity of chaos which will destroy man in a moment. A human being needs desperately HaKadosh Baruch Hu to intervene and to serve as a referee in order to protect man from the spiritual forces that will overcome him to destroy him. And how do you know that's correct? Because we find over and over in this pasuk, and as the Radak points out in Chumash in Devarim, when HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, I will hide myself from you, I'll just leave, I'll disappear, I will conceal myself. Then in a moment, the pasuk, what happens? We become eaten, we become consumed. We, v'hoya v'histarti fonai mayhem, Hashem doesn't have to punish us. All Hashem needs to do is to disappear. Hashem needs to hide. And when he hides, the natural force of chaos overcome us. Okay, that's what the pasuk, that's what this pasuk says here as well. This pasuk says the same exact idea. Hashem says, "I will no longer shepherd you." And then, what's going to happen? It's natural. Hamesa somos v'hanichchedes tikochet. When Hashem hides himself, Hashem decides to no longer be our shepherd, then chaos breaks out and we are doomed. That's a very interesting idea, because talk about health. Everyone is into organic food, everyone is into don't take medicines, don't do this, just be natural. Don't take an aspirin, take an Advil. What are you putting into your body? The body was meant to take care of itself. Don't drink, don't smoke, don't do things to your body that are not natural, and your body can handle itself. Don't, you know, this is a very prevalent attitude today in the world, at least in the world of health, in the environment. Don't disturb the environment. If you don't go and pollute the environment, then the world will be a beautiful place, or it will be productive. But yet when it comes to spirituality, we see this over and over, that if you just leave things to its natural state and you do not strive, you do not work to improve yourself spiritually, then there is a churban. Hashem, if Hashem is not invited to participate in your party, Hashem is absent, then what happens is, there is chaos. So how do we balance this contradiction in what appears to be, in the least in the world, Olam HaTeva, in the world of nature? It appears to be, you don't bother the equilibrium. Don't disturb the equilibrium of this world, and it will not disturb you. How do you balance that principle with a pasuk like this, where Hashem says, if I'm just going to disappear, then you're done, you're finished? How do you understand this? It must be, the difference is between teva and ruchnis. Teva, in nature, Hashem made the world in teva. It don't disturb it. But in ruchnis, in the spiritual dimension of this world, Adam l'omol yulat, man was meant to work, to strive, to improve his davening, improve his ruchnius, his learning, improve his relationship with Hashem, his performance of mitzvahs. And only through toil and intervention can a person protect himself from other foreign spiritual forces which are evil, which can destroy him. Those that are meant to double die by death, by a plague, by sword, in famine, my words, that I will not appoint upon you a shepherd. Hashem says, Hashem made a declaration, I will no longer appoint. He understands the word lo ere eschem to mean, until now we learned in the Rashi, in the Mitzudois, and the Radak, that Hashem, I am the shepherd. Hashem roi loy echsar. Hashem is my shepherd. The Targum is not saying Hashem is, according to Targum, Hashem is stating, I'm not your shepherd, but I appoint. I rule this world, and I create conditions where people, human beings, rise up to serve as your leader. Good people. You have Gedolei Yisrael, you have Askanim, who are solid good people, who naturally find their place as leaders of the Jewish people and lead and guide them with dignity and success. But when Klal Yisrael is not deserving, then I do not intervene. I do not create the conditions and bring about events where good people end up in positions of leadership. And instead you have, who's leading you? Either no one is leading you, or corrupt people. People who are selfish and are just using Klal Yisrael for their own honor, benefit, and parnasa. They're in the position of leadership. They have their own agenda. They have their own agenda. They have their own families, their own needs, their own purposes. And they think, in their corrupt mind, that they're doing Klal Yisrael a favor as being the leaders of Klal Yisrael. You're not doing anyone a favor but yourself. You're getting a nice big salary. You're getting covered. And you're getting prestige for your family so you can get them jobs and this and that. But Klal Yisrael means nothing to you. They're just a tool in your hands in order for you to have a good life. Rachmana Litzlan, that's a punishment for the Klal Yisrael. We have people like that in leadership. And why is that happening? Because we don't deserve it. If we really deserve good leaders, HaKadosh Baruch Hu would bring about events that people that would lead us would be people that are sincere, that have our best interest in mind, not their own. And that's what the Targum says, not like all the other Befarshim that learned that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is the shepherd. According to the Targum, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is saying, I'm not the shepherd, but I am the person, I am the being that puts into place a conditions that create and bring forth leaders. The Amoris, I said, the law limano'o, I will not appoint alechoin upon you parnosin leaders, the moisin, and therefore what will happen when you do not have good leaders, the moisin musun, those that are meant to die will die. Ude mishteitzan yishteitzoin, those that will be rejected. Okay, this word behamichedes. Those that will be rejected will be rejected. Ude yishtarun yivzun, the survivors will be despised. Givarios nichse kirive, one person, yas nichse, will eat up. It says over here, will eat up. Nichse means to eat up. Kirive, his own relative. One person will, okay, so there. I find something very frightening this past week. I talked about three different stages. Dever, Cherev, and Hamesotomos, Dever, Vahan nichedes tikoche. The Radak learns the word v'hanichedes tichochet means death. That's not what Rashi said, and that's not what the Mitzudas David said. The word, go back to Rashi. The Rashi comments on these words v'hanichedes tichochet and pasuk test. Pasuk test, there is no Rashi on this. And in the Mitzudas David, let's quickly go back to the Mitzudas David and pasuk test. Pasuk, v'hanichedes hasara, those that are going to be lost. I remember that when we spoke about the Mitzvah David, we spent a lot of time on this. What is the purpose of a leader? The role of a leader is defense. No one should die. According to the Mitzvah David, if we could just go back, he had a very different translation of this pasuk. Hashem says, I will no longer be your leader. I will no longer be your shepherd. What does the leader do? Two things. The main things that a leader does is, number one, he defends you. The hanesa samus, self-defense. Number two, a leader is v'hanichedes tikochet, make sure people do not lose their way. The sheep do not get lost. If your country, if everyone in the country is trying to leave, is revoking their citizenship, is fleeing to another state, this is a failure. Okay, we will discuss this, that the way governors should be defined. You have a governor of a state, and he serves in the state for, let's say, whatever number of years he serves, and now that his time comes and he leaves, and you want to give him a mark, you want to have a baseball card. How come we don't have baseball cards for politicians? Isn't it a great business, Rebbe Chol? You have baseball cards for baseball players, and on the back of the baseball cards, there are stats.
I'd prefer a dartboard. But
I think it'll be a great idea. Isn't it a good business idea? You have baseball cards, the baseball players, and you have a picture of them, nice picture of them doing whatever they're doing, their specialty is, and then on the back they have all the stats, RBIs and how many home runs and how many, you know, all politician, and they have the stats. How many years he served, and how many crimes he committed. how many scandals was he involved in?
How many bills did he originate?
They called garbage pail kids.
They called what?
Garbage pail kids.
All right.
Garbage pail kids?
Yeah.
Okay, I think it'll be a great business to have baseball cards for politicians. Every politician, they have to go buy a set.
Politicians are garbage.
Okay, the Bible, before we continue, can you hear me well? Is it clear? Is the sound okay? A blazer? Is the sound okay? It's good? Okay, it's good enough?
I mean, it's rough, but, you know.
All right, let's continue. I apologize.
My side is good.
It's good? Okay, so let's continue. So that's what the Mitzvah David said. The Radak is a very different interpretation. The Radak is not talking about just self-defense. The defense forces. He's not talking about people getting lost. he's talking about two different types of death. Death through dever and death through cheret. And in the third part of the pasuk, vanish orois techal lo isha sarusa, which means poverty. There's going to be poverty. If you look back this year, isn't that what happened? First came Corona. Okay, there was Corona. And then with Corona came, there was violence. People, you know, the BLM people evolved. The BLM people evolved out of this this matzah of dever, and they're dangerous people. And the next part is rough. The economy really had a very big hit. When the BLM people marched through Manhattan, and our mayor decided that they have a right to vent their anger. That's right. My wife said that these are her people, and they have a right to vent their anger. Do whatever they want to do. So what happened to Manhattan? Manhattan became a ghost town. So you know, it's like a process. Dever, when there's a plague, it leads to violence. And when there's violence, there's poverty. There's a ra'av. This is a natural process. And you see, it's kedai to learn these things so that you know how, if you know what the process is, and you're in a position of leadership, you know what you have to do to stop the process from getting out of hand. Okay, let's go further. Now we have some novel ideas in understanding this pasuk. Everything here is going to be l'shita soy. Now that we know that according to the Radak, the three shepherds are the three kings that came after Yoshiyahu, namely Yehoiachaz, Yehoiakim, and Tzidkiyahu. So it says now, I took my staff as Noyam. Noyam is the father, is Yoshiyahu. Kilohoya achav melech toiv. Noyam, when it says in the previous pasuk, according to the interpretation of the Radak, when it says in the previous pasuk that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is describing the past history of Klal Yisrael, of the Bayis Rishon, I'm going to shepherd them with two staffs. Good morning, the staff of Noyam and the staff of Chovlin. The staff of Noyam was Yoshiyahu. Yoshiyahu served for 22 years. He was one of the greatest kings in Klal Yisrael. He was the pleasant one. After Noyam came the Chovlin, the damagers, the destroyers. And this fits very well with what of Kalman mentioned, that why is Noyam b'lashon yochid and Chovlin b'lashon rabin? And now according to the Radak, it's perfect, because according to Radak, the Noyam refers to Yoshiyahu, one person, whereas the Chovlin is b'lashon rabin, it refers to many, three kings, Yehoiachaz, Yehoiakim, and Tzidkiyahu. So that explains why Noyam is B'loshim Yochid, Yoshiyahu, one person, and the Chovlin are the next three, B'loshim Rabin. It will come and we ask this question. Why is Noyam B'loshim Yochid and Chovlin B'loshim Rabin? And here, according to Radak, it's perfect, because Noyam is one person. I've taken Esmakli as Noyam, Ze Yoshiyahu, Ki Lohoy Achrav Melech Toiv, Vo Eg Da Oisai, cut him down. And remember the other question that we had? The other question was, the word of egda is not the right word to use in reference to a stick. The word egda is a word which typically we expect to be used when something is blossoming. There's something that's growing and it's developing and it's expanding. And then someone comes along and cuts it down, stunts its growth. So if until now we were learning that the word noyam and chovlin represent different hanhogos, different ways to rule, different methods of leadership. You have a leader that's very tough, and you have a leader that's very soft. So the word ve'egdad did not appear to be the correct word to describe the end of the era of being kind and soft with the people. But if we're going to be like that, the word noyam refers to Yoshio, and now Hashem says Yoshio's tenure is going to come to an end. Indeed, the word fits like a glove, because Yoshio was growing. Yoshio was in a constant path, going higher and higher. He was king for 22 years, as Rav Kalman mentioned yesterday, when he was 8 years old. He became the king when he was 8 years old. And then 8 years later, 8 years into his malchus, when he was 16 years old, he fully came to he matured to the degree where he realized what his purpose was, what his role was, what his mission was. And from that moment on, it was a steady climb, going higher and higher to raise Klal Yisrael out of the mud that they were found themselves in after the era of Menashe and Amon. And he was going higher and higher. And in fact, he believed that he was already living in the times of Mashiach 20 years later, right before he died. He made a fatal mistake by not listening to the words of Yirmiyahu, who told him to surrender to prophecy. But had he been allowed to live, who knows? He could have actually brought Mashiach. And when the pasuk says "Vo'egdah," they cut him down. The word is the perfect word, because Yoshio was ascending, he was blossoming, and now his growth was stunted because he was killed. So the word really fits well. So over here, some grammar. The word lachafer has a tsere, two dots under the pay, and there's a yud after the pay. Now he's saying, this by the way is a very interesting thing. Lehafer. You don't usually have a yud. This is a very interesting grammatical. Lehafer. It's a pasuk yud. Look at pasuk yud. Pasuk yud. Ve'egdah oisoi lehafer. Lehafer. What's the yud doing here? You don't have a yud.
Oh, I'm sorry. Pasuk yud dalid is lehafer
without a yud. Right. So this word is a very unusual word. The word to have a yud. You don't usually have a yud in between the pay after a tsere. The tsere is a standalone vowel, and you don't have, when you have a yud, you have a yud after a chiruk. Tzitzis. The word tzitzis, does it have a yud? So it has a yud. See, after the first sadi, there's a yud, and after the second sadi, there is no yud. Why? So there's a very big debate among the medaktikim, the Balei Pituk, if there's a difference in pronunciation between a chirik that's followed by a yud, that's called a chirik mole, it's full, versus a chirik that does not have a yud. So the word tzitzis is the perfect example. Because after the first sadi, you have a yud, and after the second sadi, there is no yud. So how do you correctly pronounce the word tzitzis? So many people in the Lithuanian world don't pay much attention to this, and they just say tzitzis. They say them both wrong. It's wrong both because they pronounce a chiruk like a shiva. How do most Litvaks pronounce the word? You say every day Kriyashma, twice a day. Most Litvaks, they say tzitzis. Go into Eichler, you stand there for a few minutes, and someone will come and I'll say, can I buy a pair of tzitzis? What's tzitzis? Where do they get that word from? Tzitzis. Two shvas. Tzitzis. What's that? There's no such thing. It's tzitzis. Now, the first chirik has a yud, and the second chirik is not followed by a yud. When it's followed by a yud, it's a much deeper sound. It's tsi, tsi. And the second one that's not followed by a yud, it's very hard to pronounce. Most people cannot pronounce it, including myself. It's in between a shva and a chirik mole. Ashwas se, and a chirik mole is si. So how do you do something in between a shvat se and si? I can't do it. I can't do it. It's basically, it turns into a shva. It turns, so it's, but at least the first chirik is followed by a yud. That is a much deeper sound. Si, si tzis, si tzis. What did I just do right now? I pronounced the first one as a chirik mole and the second one like a shva. That's wrong because I don't know how to do it. I cannot adjust my, I need a speech therapist even to pronounce the regular words. Certainly to pronounce this, si, sis. Okay, enough of that. Yeah. Okay, so yes, the very question is the Gematria, because it says the Gemara, the Gematria of tzitzis is 600. You only get that number when you have two yuds. Good question. So you have to know the Gemara, what does that mean exactly? It's a very good question. I don't have a good answer at this moment. I don't know what the answer is. Basically, the Gematria is not based upon the spelling. The Gematria is based upon the pronunciation. There's such a principle that when you make a Gematria of a word, the Gematria is based upon the pronunciation of the word. Thus, since the word is pronounced, even if Chirik Pastel is pronounced with a shtickle yod, a little bit of a yod, therefore, we add that yud into the Gematria. It's a very difficult question you're asking, and they're very, very unpleasant answers, but let's leave it with that. The bottom line is that in our Sifri Torah, the way the word tzitzis is spelled is there's a yud after the first tzadi, and there is no yud after the second tzadi. And there's a dilemma among them with Akhtim, if there is a difference in pronunciation between a chirik that has a yod and a chirik that does not have a yod. Why am I telling you all of this? Because no one holds that there's a yod that comes after a tzere. There's no such thing. There is no yod that comes after a tzere.
Yeah, can I just point something out?
Yes.
I am now looking at the parsha of Hafara in Matos, and all those mentions of Hafara, there are no yuds.
Exactly. So what's this yud over here doing here? That is what the Radak, that is exactly what the Radak
is. It's a fair question.
What?
It's a fair question.
Fair question.
Oh.
What? So this is what the Radak over here is
doing. Yud.
In generally, there's not supposed to be a yud altogether in general. And here, to add to the question, why is there a yud in this word when there is no yud in any other time the word hefer is presented? So the Radak says, "Bitzere uvi yud hameshech." He's inventing now a new term. The Radak is the father of diktuk. Sefer hamichlal. He is the source of all laws of grammar. Anyone who learns grammar, the first thing is to learn the Sefer hamichlal. He sets the rules. All the rules in Eichler's, all the books in Eichler's that have the rules of grammar, that are sitting and collecting dust on those poor shelves, are all built upon the foundation of Sefer HaMichlol, and here he invents a new principle called the Yud HaMeshech. Omar, so I guess if you want to interpret this homiletically, you have to say is that this Hafarah, this annulment, will continue for a long, long time. The Hafarah here, when you have a pay, when you have a tsere with the yud, it gives a connotation that the message of the pasuk is to the yud. What does the yud do? The yud. Let us take a step back. When you have a chirik, one dot, si, what is the yud that follows the first sadi? What is it really doing? It is expanding the syllable. It is expanding the sound. Don't just say tzi, tzi, tzi. Say tzi, bimamshech. Don't just rush through davening. Bimamshech, tzi, tzis. You have to put the tzmilara, tzi, tzis. Here, it's the same thing. It's going to be the Okay, I'm elaborating, I'm exaggerating, but this in the pronunciation adds meaning to the adds expression to the word. That this hafara, this annulment of the covenant between us and the Umar Sa'ilam, as we learned yesterday, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu made, either we made an agreement with the nations, we're not gonna, you don't bother us, we won't bother you. Or this that Hashem made an arrangement with the Umay Sa'ilam, don't bother my people, it's gonna be annulled, not just for 5 minutes, not for 10 years, not for 100 years, for 1,951 years, it's been annulled. It has been annulled for a very, very long time. So it's mamshech. This has been extended. There is a yud, an extra yud over here giving an indication.
I discovered something else here. On this word, there is a pashta. Pashta ze pa ta'am mafsik. Lahafer et briti. The brit will be stopped.
Mafsik, very good.
Ta'am mafsik. Lahafer et briti.
Very good. It's called very good. There's also a message. So in the Kriya adds the Ta'ameh HaMikra and the grammar adds Bayer into what the Pasuk means to say.
I mean, yeah,
it's
right.
Enormous. There's so much. The way you learn. I remember when I years ago, I daven Chaim Berlin every Shabbos, religiously, every Shabbos. And they had then a phenomenal Baal Kriya. His name was Rav Moshe Fruchtam, Zichrono Livracha. He passed away about, I don't know, 15 years ago, something like that. And he was the Baal Kriya. And he liked ceremony. He liked to put on a show. When he leaned on Shabbos, it was a show. It was mamash a show, a Broadway show. His brothers used to make fun of him. They would say, Parshas Vayetze, directed and produced by Moshe Fruchtenberg. He would lane with so much flavor. He would basically, when he would read the psukim, he would be reading to you the Rashis. You would hear Rashi's commentary in the way he laned the pasuk. And so not everyone liked it. They were misnagdim. There are certain types of people that don't go for this type of stuff. They like to go to shul, like the real litvaks. They want to have a dry laning, as dry as can be. You start giving expression into the laning, they go meshuga. They can't handle it. Other people, they like it. They like a good show. So he put on a show. Most people liked it. Some people were not so crazy. He got a little carried away. He made up his own things. He got some interesting things that he just made up on his own, I think. So, but the psuk in here, part of the Ta'ameh HaMikra, and something like this, which has an extra yud in the vowel, is all a sign, is an instruction for the mikra, for the Baal Kriya.
Right. When you read,
this is how you read it. And when you read it this way, you're expressing an idea. You're making a point. Wake
the
up.
The whole page is like this. A few times here. Vatikzaha nafshi bahem, me and them. It stopped. And he says, v'anichedet tikachet. And he says, there was another one here. Or maybe I...
It took me, yeah, I'll tell you.
Shalosh pa'amim, three times that something stopped there. Something stopped. Either my relationship with them or something. Or nicheder, boom, also.
It took me many years to learn a trick, to discover something lame. And I didn't see this anywhere. I never heard this from anyone. This is something, my personal observation. If you ask the average Baal Kriya, what is the most important trap? What is the most essential? You know, in the Ta'ameh HaMikra, this ma'apach, pashto, munach, zokif, koton, gershayim, kadma, vi'azla, Mercha Kifula. You have all the different Tamei HaMikra in the beginning of the Chumash. Go and open up the beginning of the Chumash, and they show you there all the Tamei HaMikra, all the, their names, v'chulu v'chulu. If what is the most critical, if you have to go answer on a quiz, on a game show quiz, what is the most critical one of the Tamei HaMikra? I believe if you'll ask 99% of the Baalei Kriya, they're going to say to you without batting an eyelash, Soif Pasuk. You have to know. That's the halacha. If you don't stop at the end of the Pasuk, Soif Pasuk, it's a very easy trap. It's just a little teeny line that looks like a mesek. Looks like a mesek, Soif Pasuk, right? That's what's the most important thing, the most important trap. But okay, that's true. I'm not going to disagree with that because that's the halacha. If you don't stop at the end of the pasuk, make an indication of the pasuk ends here, and you have to run on sentence, you're not yoytze. I believe there's an actual problem. By the way, there's an exception to the rule. When is the exception? Purim. There's an incredible insight. I discovered this year, that on Purim, when you lay in the Megillah, this is incredible. Ramesh, are you here, Ramesh? I'm listening. I'm doing it on the phone, so I can't see everyone.
I'm in my car, but I'm listening. Yeah, go ahead.
I came across this year, and I don't even remember where I saw this, is that being that the Megillah is called an Igeres, has many halachas. You pick it up, you spread it out, you know, it's not rolled, there's no Asei Chayim. One of the elements of a mikra being called an igeres is that you don't have to stop for the soif pasuk. And if you read one pasuk into the next pasuk as one massively long run-on sentence and you don't make that indication to stop, it's fine. It might not be mechudar, but it's fine. Kriya satoira, if you read run-on sentences, you're not yoytze. For some reason, in the shuls, we don't stop the Baal Kriya. It's very common that the Baal Kriya gets a little confused, and he goes and he reads a run-on sentence. He doesn't stop in the right place, and he just goes through the stop sign, right? He glides through the stop sign. It is New York, after all, right? So you just go right through it. Okay, that's a very big problem. That's a very, very big problem.
You saw what we read this week from that website that some hold that even an esnachta, the same halacha.
You have to
you
stop.
Can't even run it's through not, an esnachta if
you run through a soif pasuk. The in most shuls they're not going to stop you. Even shuls that are very medactic, they really get the Baal Kriya. For some reason, they let a Baal Kriya go by if he misses one or two soif pasuks. They'll let him go. If you miss every single one, they're going to fire you. But you miss one or two, they'll let you go by. If you mispronounce a word, they'll kill you. They have a shotgun there, a special Shabbos shotgun that. It's not muksa if you mispronounce the word. But if you glide through a soif pasuk, you know you've committed a crime, a very serious crime, but they let you go through. But Megillas Esther, you're allowed. It's unbelievable. Why? Because it's called a nigeres. And part of something, when you read a letter, you don't have to stop. You don't have to stop by the stop signs. When you read a nigeres, you can glide all the way through. Okay, so a soif pasuk is critical for the halacha of Kriya Satira. But if you want it, besides the soif pasuk, this is my personal observation. I never saw this anywhere, and I can't, and it took me decades to figure this out. The most important trap is the pashto. Mapach pashto. That pashto is amazing. If the only thing you know on the page is where every pashto is, you can fake it. You can fake the whole aiming. You'll get into storms here and there, but you can make it if you know where the pashto is. Somehow the pashto, it sets the tone. It puts the entire pasuk in balance. Very fascinating. You have to be very careful. There's a difference between a pashto and a kadma. Many Baal Kriya don't even know the difference.
Of course, yeah,
a kadma, kadma is always milara. It's always in the beginning of the word, and a pashto is at the end. Sometimes occasionally
you have katon. When you have katon after that, after the pashta, you have katon. Yeah.
Well, yeah, usually it depends. But you have either munach. Sometimes you have a munach katon, a munach katon, a katon, right? No. Or whatever. You know, ma'pach pashta munach katon. The ordinary sequence is the four things: ma'pach pashta munach, munach katon. Sometimes you skip the munach. All right, the pashta, all different types. There are all different types of sequences. But the pashta, of Kalman touched upon this, is that when you have a pashta, it's a very powerful. It puts the entire sentence in perspective. It sets the balance. If you always check it out, how the pashta puts everything in balance. Okay, now going back over here, so I just wanted to bring out this point over here. We have this word, going back in sidetrack, we have the word the hefer, a very unusual word here. A yud after the tsere. You don't have a yud after a tsere. What is it doing here? It's called yud. He calls this term called yud hamamshich, which is extending the tsere over yud hameshech, which is extending the sound of the tsere, something a little bit unique. And I'm trying to tell you a drush. The reason why this is being done over here is because that this hafara between that has occurred between us and the Umos HaOlam, or between Hashem and the nations of the world, that they will not harm us, has been annulled for a very long time. A very long time. The Churban Bayis Rishon, I told you 1,951 is a mistake. So 1,951 years plus the 70 years of Golus and the 420 years of the Bayis Rishon, because even during the Bayis Rishon, it was never a full restoration of what it was during the Bayis Sheni. Because even during the time of the Bayis Sheni, it was never a full restoration of the peace that occurred during the Bayis Rishon. Okay, let's go further. Because Klal Yisrael were not observant. They were forced. The only time that now this is a very frightening thing, Moshe Kosov, like it says in Malachim. Okay, the only times, he's saying something very frightening, the only times the Jewish people were observant, he's saying over here, is because they were forced to be observant. Many people, it's a very frightening thing, they're religious people, they go through all the motions, but they're totally burnt out. And the only reason why they appear to be religious is because they don't want to ruin their children's shidduchim. They don't want to lose all of the benefits that come with being part of the club of the Orthodox community. But unfortunately, their minds are elsewhere. It's a very, very frightening thing to live with conviction, with emuna, not just to go through the motions and make a conscious make a decision that it's just not practical for me to abandon Yiddishkeit, because I'm a member of this society. And by being a member, there are benefits that come along with it. And I just can't escape at this point in time. It's very, very frightening. It's very frightening. And here is saying over here is during the period of the Bayis Sheni, or even during the end of the Bayis Rishon, this that people were observant wasn't because they really wanted to be observant. It's because they had no choice, because they lived in a country where these are the rules. Shabbos, you have to shut your store. If you open up your store on Shabbos, they'll burn it down. The Haredim will come and burn down your store. So that's why I'm Shomer Shabbos. Not because I care about Shabbos. It was up to me. My store will be open on Shabbos. It was up to the city. There will be buses going through Tel Aviv all Shabbos. It's just not worth it. A bus, how much does a bus cost? The bus costs about $300,000, maybe more. I think the ones in Eretz will cost even more. In America, you know how much of a city bus costs in America? It costs over $300,000 city bus. When you go on, if you ever go and you see three buses lined up next to each other, that's about $1 million, almost $1 million. Four buses, way over $1 million. How much does the car cost? $25,000. So why does a bus cost $300,000 and the car cost between $25,000 and $40,000? I don't know. I really don't know. I don't know. I guess because the city's paying for it. If the city's paying for it, so you're able to rip them off, charge them $300,000 for something which only costs $100,000. Any event.
Well, I mean, there's also mass production, but That's another
story.
I'm not denying what you're saying, though.
It's the same factories that make them. It's mass production.
The proper comparison is between a private company and a city bus.
Okay. Look, they wanted to do over here a public bathroom on Avenue L, right around the corner from us in the park. And the amount of money they charged the city for the public bathroom is more than the most expensive bathroom in the most exotic hotel in the world. Does it make any sense to you? Mm-hmm. Next, and the city's willing to pay it also, by the way. That's so remarkable. Rashi, that the one that made the covenant is not us, it's Hashem. Hashem made the peace treaty. This is beautiful what the Radak says. What's the proof? What is the proof that there was a covenant between Klal Yisrael and the Umay Sa'olam that they would not harm us? Because Paro Necho did not decide to enter Eretz Yisrael without first getting a permit. He applied for a permit. He needs a permit. Paro Necho, the world power, do whatever he wants. He wants to go. He wants to go march through the land to get to where he wants to go. Because he has to go and apply for a permit. Are you kidding? You know how many people that I know now? I know how many stories I can tell you. People doing construction, they don't have a permit. There is a place here. I'm not going to tell you the lashon, but I know of a place. You pass by. It's very busy. You hear massive sounds of construction. There are trucks outside. They're bringing in massive steel. And someone there told me a dirty secret. They have no permit. They have no permit. And they're just defiant. Would you believe things like this go on? Next.
All the inspectors are on Zoom.
No, they come around. They come around. I know a great story. Someone that I know very well. He decided to do construction in his home without a permit. And the contractor was the firm guy, and he said, all right, we'll try to do it. We'll try it. Lo and behold, Vayihi Hayoim, car pulls up, nice emblem of the DOB, Department of Buildings. Pulls up, someone must have called, whatever. And there was a fellow on the block was in construction, happened to be the Hashkocha Pratis. He wasn't supposed to be there, and he sees this car pull up, and he knows exactly what's about to happen. And you get a ticket, you're in a lot of trouble. You get a ticket, not only do they give you this massive ticket, they demand that you demolish whatever you built. They don't care what you built. You could have spent $1 million. It's all coming down. It's unbelievable. This is no joke. So this guy is a miracle of miracles. In this neighborhood, Ramesh, around the corner from here, this fellow who's in construction knows exactly what's about to go down. He sees the car pull up and he goes in to save him. What does he do? He goes over and he starts schmoozing with the inspector and he doesn't budge. And he starts talking and talking and talking. And then he says, I see you have a camera. He says, no, you can't take a picture today. Shabbos. It was Thursday afternoon. Since when is Shabbos on Thursday afternoon? It's Shabbos today. You're not allowed to take a picture. You're not allowed to go. That's no violation of religion to go take a picture of a Jew on Shabbos. Don't you know? Don't you know this is a violation? United States. The inspector. Ad kidei kach. After an hour, the inspector just went away. And he saved this guy easily $100,000 plus a lot of agnes nefesh. A lot of strange stories that happen in Flatbush. Next, Omar Lohofer is V.C. Asher Krati, and I'm telling you it's true. I'm not making up these stories. How do I know these stories? I don't know. Somehow these stories, they come to me. I'm a magnet for garbage. Omar Lohofer is V.C. Asher Krati, is called Am Kilu Korasakori V.C. in Kamishlo Yerul Yisrael Kilo Yerul Lachami Meoshiogi Kikam Parnecho Shachler Sholli Lachimo. He applied for a permit that goes to show there was a bris between the Umar Yisrael and Klal Yisrael. The Yonas interrogate the Isaisi Yas Malka the Atur Al Malka the Yisrael. I'm going to be the king of Ashur. Okay, so this is a whole different interpretation. The king of Ashur, Al Malka the Yisrael, the Aglesi Yosei, and he's going to exile them. Ad Ashnihu Kiyomo Dig Zoris Imhoin, until it will be changed, it will be annulled, the covenant that he made with him. The Lord Lemiflach Letavosa. Not to worship the idols. Therefore, they will be exiled amongst the nations. So what is he saying over here? He's saying over here is that the Targum appears to him in this pasuk in reference to the Aseres HaShvatim. Because the Shbarach is going to bring the king of Ashur, the Atur, upon the king of the Jewish people, which Hoshea ben Be'eri. He was the last king of the Malchei Yisrael, and the king of Ashur came and exiled them. He exiled them until the point that Ashniu Koyoma. Let me go back over here. The words are. Yeah, we are saying, why? Aldi Ashniu Koyoma the Gzar Imhoin, because we have annulled the bris that Hashem made with us not to worship idols. We have changed the covenant that Hashem has decreed upon us that we should not worship idols. So we should not worship mistakes, idols. Therefore, Giloy, we were exiled Lebenei Amemaya, the nation. So this is a very fascinating interpretation of the Targum Yonasan as he understands this passage. He learns that this pasuk here refers to the king of Ashur, Sancheriv, who exiled the Aseres HaShvatim. Why? This pasuk is giving you the answer to why bad things happened to good people. Why did the Aseres HaShvatim go into exile? The answer is because Avodah Zarah. They erected two idols, one in Basel and one in Dan. Basel and Dan. Yerav ben Nevat, he split off from Rechavam. Later came Achav, expanded the Avodah Zarah. He not allowed to worship idols. That is a prohibition. Lo yilcha luchem achilim al ponai. And because of the Avodah Zarah, that is why HaKadosh Baruch Hu brought it about that Sancheriv exiled the Aseres HaShvatim. And that's what we're going to show in this pasuk. And what's unique about this interpretation is that the bris that we are describing that has been annulled is not a covenant between us and the Umar Yisraelim. It is not a covenant between Hashem and the Umar Yisraelim that they should not harm his people. It is a covenant between us and Hashem. And the one who has annulled this covenant was us, the Aseres HaShvatim. And in punishment and in response to the Avera of this annulment, HaKadosh Baruch Hu brought it about that they went into exile. So Sach HaKol, we already have four different, very different perushim before we go to the next pasuk as to the time period of this pasuk. You see, this is really getting, the plot is thickening. It's really, really deep. We have over here the sequence of pasukim telling us that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is cutting off from, he's coming to deny the three shepherds in one yerach. And Hashem goes on to say that I had enough of them, they had enough of me, or these two expressions of that they had enough with me. They do not want to listen to my mitzvahs, they do not want to be observant. When did all of this take place? So it's three caps. So far, what do we have? According to Rashi learned that this refers to three different time periods of the early time of the Bayis Rishon, and also Tzidkiyahu. Just going back to Rashi to recap, according to number one was a time of Yehu, when Yehu wiped out Achav, okay, that was when they were wiped out. And then one, then Achazio Melech Yehuda vs Echov, and Asalia. That was Rashi. So Rashi learns all this in reference to the earlier part of the Churban Bayis, the earlier portion of the Tekufa of the Bayis Rishon. According to the Mitzudos, this refers to the Chashmonoyim, the middle portion of the Bayis Sheni. According to the Radak, it refers to the end of the Bayis Rishon, Yoshiyahu, and the three following kings. According to the Targum, we're going back. We're going back to the Golos of the Aseres HaShvatim. Now, the Targum, and we also took note that the Targum, Mr. Radak, made this point, that the Targum did not want to tell us who the three shepherds are. Rashi, the Mitzudos, and the Radak were very bold in declaring with certainty exactly who the three shepherds are. Targum did not. Targum left it. Three shepherds. I'm not telling you who they are. But the Targum did give us insight into his thinking when he concludes that I will punish them. He gives us an insight that we're describing the era of the Aseres HaShvatim. He brings the story the furthest back, even further back than Rashi, because Rashi is giving you three time periods, and the last one is Asalia, which was already long after the Aseres HaShvatim went into Golos. And the Targum is taking us back leading up to the Churban of the Aseres HaShvatim. He does not tell us who the three shepherds are, but the conclusion is Sanhedrin will now arrive and he will exile the Aseres HaShvatim, and he makes it clear as day the reason why they're going into Golos, because you can always guess. No one knows why. No one knows why the Holocaust happened. No one knows why Corona happened. No one knows why anything happened. But he, the Targum, is telling us that I'll tell you why the Aseres HaShvatim went into Golos. It wasn't because of Sinas Chinam. It wasn't because of Gili Arayos. It wasn't because of Gezel. You know why they went into Golos? I made with the Jewish people a bris, a covenant. Lo yihye lecha Elohim acherim al ponoi. And you, the Aseres HaShvatim, have annulled the bris. You have violated the bris by erecting two massive locations of Avodah Zarah in Beisel and Don. And you worship these idols, the Egle Hazav. And that's the reason why you're going into Golos. Simple as that. According to Rashi and the Mitzudos and the Radak, can you say that? Do we know why the Aseres HaShvatim went into Golos? Do we have a pasuk that definitively tells us the reason? Maybe they do, maybe they don't. But this pasuk is certainly not the pasuk to tell us why they went into Golos, the Aseres HaShvatim, because according to the old those three commentators, we're not even discussing the Aseres HaShvatim. So this is not even relevant.
You know what? I have a problem. Why does the Navi is so vague about it? He says the message is strong, and you don't know to whom is he talking about. He's talking about by Trishon, by Cheni, and this. It is the basics. I don't understand why.
That is the first Rashi in Sefer Zechariah. Each Navi
gave business to the Mefarshim, but it's, why?
That's the first Rashi. Go back. This all goes back to the first Rashi in Sefer Zechariah. This is why this Sefer is the one of the most fascinating Sefer of all Tanakh. Because the first Rashi in Sefer Zechariah on page 712 says, Zechariah sesuma hi me'oid.
Oh, but
why? It doesn't say this about anyone else, Rashi. This Sefer is completely hidden from us. We have no clue what in the world is going on here. It's a dream. A dream makes sense. A person wakes up in the morning and a dream doesn't make one bit of sense. Isn't it? What's going on over here? The Ain Onu Yuchoyim Lamoid Al Anitas Pisroinoi Ad Yavol Viyore Tzedek. Moire Tzedek. He writes over here that there's absolutely no way to really know what these words mean until the Moire Tzedek will come and tell us what these words mean. And Rashi is therefore, I don't know what rule is going on here. I'll do my best. And my interpretation rule will be based upon the foundation of the Targum Yonas and Ben Uziel. Those words in Rashi.
But why?
Where do you have a Rashi like this? You have a Rashi anywhere in Tanakh, the whole Tanakh, where Rashi goes and says such a thing like this. And that really sets the tone for the entire Sefer. And that's what makes the Sefer very, very mystical. And as you see, we're going to the Mefarshim. We never learn anything like this. Where basically every single one of the Mefarshim has a whole different world of interpretation. Yeah. Well, we learned the other Sfarim together. You know, the Mefarshim, they're pretty much the same. Okay, they translate the word this way, that way. The fundamental differences in understanding what's going on is not all that great. But here in Zechariah, you go in the kotze la kotze. Every single Mefarsh lives in their own world and their own orbit. And each one, there are advantages in every one of these, like we discussed, for Egda, the one that we learned today, our cut down. According to Rashi, the Mitzudos, and the Targum, what does the word mean? What does that mean? The word doesn't fit. But according to that, I'm going to Radak, it really makes a lot of sense. Well, Egda means Yoshio. Yoshio was on the way up. He was like a rocket. He was on the way up, a steady ascent.
Yeah, yeah.
And all of a sudden, cut down the end. It fits. But there are other parts of the Radak's interpretation that doesn't fit. It doesn't seem to really hold water, and it's very forced. That's why this is so mysterious. Okay, let's just finish the passage.
I have a feeling you can talk to learn Sefer Zechariah according to your according to one story. Then let's say Bayit Sheni. So the whole Sefer go according to Bayit Sheni, and then learn according to Bayit Rishon. So right. and then about the Corona. So it means that it's a Sefer that belongs to all generations, all twofold.
Read into it.
And you can get the message. Whatever it is, whatever you are.
All Nevi'im is true to a certain degree.
But in all this Nevi'im case, is true.
It's more right. This is more vague, it opens up to more. What time is it now? I can't see the time.
Now,
10:47. Okay, we have to stop over here. Okay, we're going to stop over here, take a short break, and then we're going to do Haggadah. I want to spend some more time today on the Haggadah. Okay, and then tomorrow,